Well, welcome back. Welcome anew. I am Joseph McClendon III, and you have landed on the Further Faster podcast. And along with my guest, we are here to do exactly what the name implies, and that is to assist you in going further, faster, in becoming wealthy. And around here, wealthy means to be healthy, happy, and financially abundant. And my guest today, it is my privilege to introduce you to my guest. There's an old saying, Jim Rohn, the late, great Jim Rohn, said that if you can't see what I see in you, borrow my glasses. And I've been borrowing this man's glasses for close to four decades now. His name is John Lewis Parker, and he is all things expert on the most valuable piece of real estate that we all have, and that is that 6 inches of real estate between our ears. So grab a pad and paper and get ready to have your mind, let's just say, readjusted with John Lewis Parker. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back. Welcome back. I am over the top excited to introduce you to, and maybe for some of you, reintroduce you to, because this is his second time here on the Further Faster podcast, is my dear friend, John Lewis Parker. And like I said, in the tease, in the very beginning, he is going to assist us on having a different understanding of something that you may have, let's just say, a different opinion of that has to do with your brain. Now, John, amongst so many other things, I've known him. He's probably one of, if not the oldest friend that I have now. I've known him for close to four decades. I first met him as a musician. John is a Grammy-winning, multi-Grammy-winning musician. He penned one of the most popular songs of all times, Hard Habit to Break for Chicago, back in, I want to say, late 70s, early 80s. Middle 80s. Okay, thank you. Middle 80s. Thanks, John. And as well, his evolution beyond there, even when I met him, he was really into, you know, delving deeply into what makes us tick, what makes us do what we do, and becoming healthier and happier and all the things that are around there. And since then, he's delved deeply into those areas. And he and I have actually traveled the world. He's been on the stages with me in Spain and in Switzerland and all over the place all the time. He is helping people not just change how they think, but change what they do as well. And some of the things that he does, I want to make sure I get this right. He is an expert in non-sectarian mindfulness instruction for all ages, physical, mental health issues, business success, family issues, all interpersonal relationships. Now, that's a broad spectrum, but this is the guy that definitely holds up. John, welcome back to the Further Faster podcast.
It's great to be here, Joseph.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Listen, as I said, you've been my dear friend and my mentor for a long time. You picked me up when I didn't even believe in myself, you know, and helped me along. You've been such an advisor and such a friend to me for so long. So I want to thank you for our friendship for all these years. And let's start here. I'd like to ask, just because, you know, our listeners were here to do what we said, to go further, faster. In your opinion, what do people really want?
Well, I think that your way of putting it, they want to be happy. They want happiness, wealth, health. And in this reality that we're in here, you know, which is sort of a type A driven nature.
Yeah, no doubt.
You got to make a buck.
Yeah. You know?
But life only takes place in the present moment, but our attention is usually somewhere else. We're daydreaming about the past, worrying about the future, planning and scheming. We say, I know I'll be happy when I get this or that.
Right.
But what do people do when that day of achievement comes? We immediately, in our minds, we raise the bar. Sort of in our minds, we've already said in a positive way, yeah, I already have that. That's a technique for getting and attracting things. I already have that. So when you get it, sometimes it's not a big deal. You're already on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And of course, as you get older, you realize that never ends. You know, like you see the... you wonder when you're a young guy or girl, why does that person not want to be president of the company? You know, why do they, and they realized that it's an endless chase, a crazy way to live, but that's exactly how we live. We beat ourselves up because we're never satisfied.
Now, do people actually realize that? Do they realize it when they're in the rat race that there's no end? Or maybe a better question to ask is, at what stage do most people realize it, if they even do? Because I know people that are in the rat race and just keep on doing the grind. And so maybe the question might be, what has to happen or what generally does happen before the lights come on and they go, well, wait a minute, this is an endless race?
Well, of course, there has to be some methodology to changing something. Like it's kind of like turning around a car that's going 80 miles an hour in one direction, you know. So so therefore, people don't really, they're so steeped in it, like a fish in water.
Right.
The fish doesn't know it's in water. We're breathing oxygen. We don't know it till it's, taken away. So I can say that definitely for the first part of my life, I was caught in that trap, just like some of the listeners. I was there too. And, maybe I should say something about myself or what happened.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
When I was a young man in the 60s, I was anti-everything. You know, you've seen the parades, the marches, because everything about society, economics, religion, everything seemed hypocritical and downright mean. And so I was disillusioned. And I wanted to be, I love music. I wanted to be a musician. And yet at the same time, I didn't want to be part of anything I saw in the society. So thank goodness for music, which I had a natural ability for, and the Beatles and things like that were happening. Yet my parents and teachers and all of society frowned on this crazy entrepreneurial notion of a career in music. By the way, you think there are any entrepreneurs out there?
They're all entrepreneurs.
So, everybody said, you have to have a plan B. You know, they said, you can do that, mister, but you better have a plan B or you'll end up in the poorhouse. And luckily, I was so anti-everything that I just didn't have a plan B. I was just going to do what I wanted to do. And if it didn't work out, you know, back then we thought, you know, we'd live to maybe 30 and that would be about
it. Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Matter of fact, 30 was the curse age, I remember. It was just you were 30. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep you're so young acting that I keep forgetting you were back there too.
I was back then too.
So I just didn't understand why was following my dreams so crazy. And, you know, we're born into whatever system we're born into. So I was getting no reward, only rewarded for their good behavior, getting a good grade in something I wasn't interested in or acting correctly or something. But basically what it was knuckling under or I'll be a failure in their eyes. So I was left with a fear of following my dream and suspecting that maybe I was crazy, like maybe there is something wrong with me. But despite everything, I persevered loving music, which I was born to do. And at the same time, totally fearful of the society and the family that had conditioned me, just like most of us. You're just conditioned that way, to think that way. You see it everywhere. You hear it everywhere. So I began to make a little headway in my career, but I realized I really wasn't enjoying it, because I really didn't know how to handle situation. And I realized I was totally mentally unprepared for life. I was just like a child who had his toy, music. And I came to find that this wasn't uncommon, and like last week, I'm sort of a Dodger fan, living in LA. Uh-huh. And I was listening to the game and they were talking about this new great rookie pitcher. And they said, there's no question of him playing in the playoffs, but as far as his bag of tricks, he's ready. The only question is whether things are going well or whether things aren't going well. Can he control his emotions? So that's whether things are going well or even not going well. And you entrepreneurs out there, you know that when you get excited, when things are going well, you tend to go crazy. And when things aren't going well, we tend to go crazy or maybe depressed.
Either way, yeah.
So you know, back then when I was realizing this, I realized it wasn't just me against the world. It was me against me. I needed answers, but there was nothing supporting my dream. So as this disgruntled, you know, hippie with his fist in the air, I needed something to do. And I knew I needed some way of training my brain or somehow changing my mindset. And I discovered it in a book at a bookstore. You know, like I just happened, I actually went to the bookstore, you know, sort of like on my knees. I wasn't on my knees, but you know what I mean? Going like, you know, Lord, give me something here in this. Because, you know, there was no internet then. So that was the internet. Was the
yeah. You mean reading? That old kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, and luckily I just picked out this book. I said, oh, this sounds good. And it was a book on meditation. And, you know, slowly I got into that and it began to rewire my mind because, as you know, with the neuroplasticity that we know of, this science that supports the meditative process, you know, you can rewire your mind and change. But I call it, you know, get your mind right.
Yes.
Because instead of, you know, that commercial about cars, this isn't your father's Oldsmobile or whatever that
right,
was.
Right.
Like, well, this isn't, you know, your father's meditation or whatever, you know.
And I
whatever.
Love that. I love that.
You know what I mean? So I'm not a guru. I don't want to be a guru. I don't want to live like monks. Although, you know, it's attractive to study and to know stuff. But what happens with meditation is, like, you slowly kind of become part of organizations and things like that. And, you know, I have too much to do to do all that. So I just say, let's get your mind right. And what I can do is for people, what I love doing is, you know, just taking away the time frame. Like, it's taken me 40 or 50 years to get where I am meditation wise. And it's really, truly amazing. But it didn't have to take that long. I had to sort of discover everything for myself, you know, because I got caught up in groups, I got out of groups, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can save you all that time. I can direct you to what to read, where to read it, have discussions about it, know how to interpret that and bring it into your life so you can train your brain and you can become successful, wealthy, healthy, and enjoy it.
Enjoy the process. That is one of the things that I absolutely love about you. And it is the intersection of what you and I do together. You know, as you and I have always talked about, my methodology is changing you in the moment. But I love the metaphor that you used when we were talking just a couple of days ago about, yeah, that's the engine. I mean, that's the person. But it's like trying to fix the car without going in and fixing the engine. And I love your concept of get your mind right, because that mind is the thing that it is the engine to everything. It's going to make us feel a certain way and do things. And, you know, I spoke about this the other day. What you've done, and I teased this in the very beginning, and I said that most people have a different understanding of, I didn't say what it is, but have a different understanding of what meditation is. A lot of people feel like, okay, that's crystals and rainbows and unicorns and stuff like that. But what you've been able to do is redefine meditation and put it in a way and teach people to do it not only in a shorter amount of time, but it goes deeper as well. Talk a little bit about that, a little bit about your methodology in being able to do that and help people do that.
Well, most people don't understand how their mind operates. You know, we suffer because of the stories we tell ourselves.
Right.
You know, ask yourself, how would I experience this moment if I didn't add any interpretation? Like, for instance, we're talking here, but if I go like, oh man, you know, maybe a lot of people are listening, oh man, you know, then all of a sudden I've added that and I operate differently, and perhaps I have an unsuccessful a podcast with you. So how would I experience this moment if I didn't add any interpretation? This brings your attention to the present moment, you know, which is what meditation is about. And then you can realize over time and testing and everything that this moment itself is free of suffering. And the suffering itself is coming from you, not the situation itself.
Right, right.
You begin to become aware of the stories you're telling yourself, what your mind is telling you. And this is a new dimension of your consciousness that you, and you become aware that you're experiencing this new dimension. So like you said, like most people don't know what's going on at first, and then you start experiencing it. So it's experiential. It's not something you have to, let's say, quote unquote, have faith in or believe it's going to happen. It just begins to happen. And instead of you wondering what's happening, I'm there to tell you what's happening and then to direct you to the person that I've read or something that I know about where it really interprets that for you. So then instead of, you want to go further, faster. So instead of like finding out for yourself, which is, of course, definitely good, but instead of having to go through all that for a long period of time, at every step of the way, I can make you go further, faster by helping direct you and have conversations with you about it. You know, so you realize for a second maybe, but then your mind subsides. It's still, so instead of what it is you're asking yourself, who are you without the story? And why do people, and why do I and you hold on to the bad story? Mm-hmm. You know, we've inherited all of this dysfunction collectively through the annals of time, through our families. You know, look at the leaders of our country, of the world, look what's going on. You know, so yet the awareness, you know, which is what it's called, the awareness of what's going on is inherently joyful. So there you are with this awareness of how your mind has been conditioned by the environment, by your parents, by the teachers, you know, just like mine was, like, don't become a musician, have a plan B, you're crazy. You know, for my wife, it was don't marry him, you know, all of that stuff, which shades your life, colors your life in so many ways that you think you're crazy, you know? And so through practice, you begin to see who you really are. And by practice, I mean the very cut down, to the point, freeze-dried practice that I show you.
It's brilliant, by the way.
There's a lot of practices out there. You know what I mean? You know, you do this, you do that, you know, look at a candle, look at this, you know, look at this mandala, you know, go inside, look, you know, do your breath, which is actually what I do. There are many ways to do it. So what happens is when you do this practice, you realize you see your problems and your neuroses, and instead of being afraid of them, you are encouraged by me and by yourself, actually, to face this and realize it more and more and more and quicker and quicker and quicker in each moment. So that when I'm in this situation here, which is a little different for me than just kind of playing an instrument or, you know, in a studio with somebody, I'm realizing all the time who I am and what I'm doing, you know, instead of getting caught up in my fear of this, you know, the fear of public speaking, of this, you know, which is, you know, so very common. So like you say, meditation isn't rainbows and crystals and unicorns. It's science. And what I can show you is a technique, because nothing changes unless you apply a methodology that works.
Beautiful. And one of the things, we're going to take a break here shortly, and when we come back, we're going to delve deeper into it. But one of the things, just my own personal testimony, is I used to believe that meditation meant that you're only peaceful when you're meditating. You know, that's what it's for, is you take this time that you go, you meditate, and you're peaceful for that for a while. But what I learned and what you taught me is that that is actually, like you said, the practice, so that when you're not in that, you know, meditative state, you automatically, these are my words, you automatically default to that beauty. That's even, like you said, even when the craziness going on, what it would do is it bring me down a notch from my craziness that was going on, that yak, yak, yak that was going on inside my head. And that, you know, as you call it, that's, to me, getting your mind right. Because that's what the mind, short, you know, my words, that's what the mind really wants to do, is to be right. It wants to be just, you know, you be happy, you be peaceful in that moment, and to observe what's going on without all that dialogue, which, you know, and I know you're expressing it in your life, and we all have our own madnesses and things that we've been impacted by through our lives. And a great deal of mine was my fear of rejection, my fear of, you know, what other people would think. And, you know, in my case, it was my dad, you know, well-meaning, but, you know, the things that he said and, you know, caused me to doubt myself. And kind of the same thing, you know, don't go down this part of being an artist, because his saying was, he used to say, you know, you said just a little while ago, being in the poorhouse, my dad used to say, you'll be digging ditches. That was his saying, you'd be digging ditches. And that was kind of my dialogue and kept me through. So we're going to take a real short break, but we're going to be right back. And I want to go deeper into the mind of John Lewis Parker. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, what's good? It's me, Joseph McClendon III, and let me get real with you just for a second. Now, you've probably heard me talk about this before, something that I call the thieves of our dreams. Procrastination, hesitation, fear of failure, fear of success, self-doubt, self-loathing, imposter syndrome, and fear of rejection. Well, let me ask you a question. What if you could not only retrain your brain and your nervous system to automatically default to your absolute best thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, but you could also do the same for others that are going through difficult times and challenges in their own lives and things that are stopping them from creating the life of their desires? Well, this is what I call neuroencoding. And at the risk of sounding arrogant, these are the same tools, methods, and strategies in neuroscience that I've used to operate in the upper 5% of all of my own businesses, especially as a coach, a speaker, and a presenter for the last 30 plus years. The Neuroencoding Institute provides you with the knowledge, the tools, and unmatched support to become a certified neuroencoding specialist and guide you to the life of wealthiness. And remember, wealthy means to be healthy, happy, and financially abundant. Go to neuroencoding.com to speak to an enrollment specialist today, and I look forward to serving you at the highest level.
You're enjoying this episode on Angel Phoenix Productions Podcast Network. To explore our complete lineup of quality programs and media production services, head on over to angelphoenix.com or like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Angel Phoenix Productions.
Welcome back. We are here with my dear friend, mentor, and guide, John Lewis Parker, and he has been such an instrumental figure in my life with regard to, helping me come down off of my, talk me down off of cliffs sometimes, and that even included when we first met. John and I worked in the studio because that's how we met, and I had zero confidence in myself. My ego was in the way, and John had his methodology, if you will, of kind of getting me out of that and to get me where I needed to go. So, John, share with us a little bit more about your methodology, which, in my opinion, is so unique and so different than so many other people that talk about meditation and talk about, you know, mindfulness and things like that, because your methodology is definitely unique and it's different. Tell a little bit about what your process is, if you will.
The process is very, very, very simple. It's simply, if somebody's interested, they write to me at the email address that, you know, you'll show them, and explain that they'd like to do something, they're interested. And then at that point, I'll find out if they want to do one-to-one, which would be as often as needed or whatever it is that they'd like to do, you know, maybe once a month or twice a month or something like that. Or if they'd like to do it in a little group, which, you know, could be three, four or five people that I have a couple little groups going, or something like that, or just come to a large group that maybe you're leading or I'm doing somewhere at a high school or a college or something like that, you know, at a venue like we've done together. And then specifically for that person, I can just cut through and be able to say, okay, here's what you do. They'll do that practice for 5 or 10 minutes a day, and see if they can, if they're getting into it. If they're not, you know, they'll quit, you know, and if they want to keep going, you know, like I said, I've been going for almost 50 years. So yeah, I got a lot of stuff to tell. And I really truly recognize where a person's at within the practice of meditation and also outside of it, you know, in their life, you know, because not only have I been doing it a long time, but I'm quite old. But what happens is, you know, you start learning about people, and especially with this meditative practice, knowing your own mind, you realize that you know everyone's mind, not like in a weird way, but we're all alike. We're all connected. We're all the same when it comes down to it. And we've all been conditioned differently by our environments. If you were born in Australia, if you were born in South Africa, if you were born in China, like you have a different religion, a different this, a different that, a different way of looking at things, a different way of looking at, men and women and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which are all not real. You know, they're not really true. They're all whatever that society made up, you know, and, you know, we think we're great here. They think they're great there. So I can recognize this quite easily and help like I did with you. You know, if any of you can imagine Joseph McClendon III needing any help at all. You know? But I guess somehow I did something, you know, and it wasn't so much me. It was me using my practice to understand and get my own mind right and then help somebody else get their mind right, no matter what their conditioning was. And that's really the whole thing. You know, that it's more like, yes, we're just meditating. That's right. But there's so much more. It can go so deep and it can go so much faster. But unfortunately, in the organizations and all of this stuff, there is hierarchy and all of this stuff. And you can almost never get to a person that could really help you, that really knows anything.
There it is. Yeah.
And that's really what it is. And so I'm not saying I'm any better than these people. You know, a lot of them are really, really brilliant and they've been doing it even longer than me and et cetera, with great teachers and all of that. But try to get to them. I've hardly ever been able to get to them, and I've been doing it all this time. So that's how I operate.
That is beautiful, because one of the things that I really appreciate that is what you said is that, and that's just how I know you to be, and you've always been that way. Is you go right to the core, whether it's age or whether it is experience or whatever, you know how to have a conversation with somebody and know what's going on with them and know what they need. But one of the greatest things about you, and I will say, you kicked my ass several times, you know, when I was younger, and you went right to the core and you said, look, you know, this is not real. This is what you're saying to yourself and what you're doing is not real. And that, by the way, does include helping me get to where I am right now. I appreciate the compliment that you said about imagine that Joseph McClendon needed help. Well, I did, and I still do. And so, you know, one of the things, and part of the reason I have you on this show, and part of the reason you and I continue to have the relationship where we'll call each other and, hey, John, here's what's going on. Here's the issues that I'm having with my son right now. And you'll go, it ain't your son. You know, it's you. You know, he's going to be doing what he's doing, but my suffering comes from what I've been doing to myself. And sometimes it's a reminder. So I say to everybody listening, one of the things is that having, and you I love the way you put it, John, having access to somebody like this is unbelievably rare. I can say that for myself at the risk of sounding arrogant. I know there's a lot of people who would love to work with me one-on-one, and I just, A, don't have the time, and B, it is, there's so many people that to be able to choose who gets to do this and who gets to do that. And you've made it clear that you're at this stage in your life. And I know you really love to help people and everything. And also recognizing that the myriad of people that are going to come to you. We said this last night. I mentioned this a little while ago. Not everybody wants to be a damn guru or sit on a mountain and meditate and things like that. And your methodology is, you know, I've watched you in front of my audiences, you know, take that audience and take them through a process or something like that, and they get a result right now. And then you give them something that they can do for maybe 10 minutes a day. And when people start to do that and they get that, then they start to get a result. And this whole, I'm not going to call it concept, but your methodology of getting your mind right is, to me, it's priceless, because most people, A, don't even know that their mind isn't right because it's so cluttered with all the stuff going through. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then B, even if they knew it, they don't know how to fix it. So it's alcohol or weed or something like that, which I'm not, you know, throwing under the bus or anything like that. But when that becomes your crutch, when you're trying to get something that you don't know, what you're after, can be a challenge.
Well, Joseph, you know, 50 years later, I'm still married to the same wonderful woman.
Absolutely. I didn't say that. Yeah.
My two kids are happy and successful. Mm-hmm. I'm financially independent. And I never, you know, my dad said, you know, you'll be eating dog food. I always imagine, you know, eating out of this can of dog food.
You're right.
You know, and I still have the fortune to write with some, you know, top blues artists and stuff like that right now. And you know, so I'm still working. I'd like to say that, you know, the study of meditation is the study of cultivation. And what I mean is, what the mind experiences, do we cling to it? Do we create problems around it? Do we experience enjoyment or aversion over it? To put it simply, do we get lost in our thoughts? And the answer is, yes, we do. And if we don't like something, we react with aversion. If we do like it, we act with pleasure. And if this is the case, we must see that we still have faults. We're still imperfect. Like you just said, we still have work to do. There must be more relinquishing and more persistent cultivation. This is what I mean by studying. If we get stuck on anything and we recognize we're stuck, we know what state we're in, and we work to correct ourselves.
That is beautiful. And that on that point about getting stuck, don't get me started on this. You know, you and I have had so many conversations about social media and television and some of the things like that. They're designed to keep us stuck. They're designed to kind of numb us from getting to the reality that we aren't happy, or that we do want to change, and that we could, should, would need to do something about it. And that's a dilemma. So finding somebody like yourself and having that conversation, really going, okay, where am I? And even if it's, and from your expertise, hearing from you, here's what I see in you, here's what I'm experiencing in you, that's one thing. So a person can go, okay, yeah, I got that. But then here's what to do about it. To get your mind right is brilliant. So, John, thank you so much. We're going to put it in, obviously, the description and in the lower third and everything, how they can find you. But please tell us your email address or what they would do. And listen, before you do that, everybody, here's what I want you to do. Reach out to this man and enjoy, and I say enjoy in, let's say, sort of tongue in cheek, because it might not be that enjoyable as you're going through, as you find some things out about it. And it is something that if you're on this podcast right now, you're on this podcast because you want more, to go further, faster. And again, further, faster, or being wealthy is healthy, happy, and financially abundant. And everybody wants to do that. And this man can not only show you, you know, what's going on that you're not having that now, but also help you get a clear cut path to do that easier, quicker, and further, faster. So, John, share with us a little bit about your maybe your email address, how they would find you, and so that they can get personally in touch with you.
Sure. It's you know, you'll laugh at this email address because it's so old that I don't even have to put a one after it, and it's I'm down for you. The letter I, the letter M, the word down, the number 4, and the letter U at Pac Bell, Pacific Bell, which isn't even in existence anymore. PACBELL.net. I'm down for you at PACBELL.net. P is in Peter, A is in Alan, C is in Carbon, PacBell.net. And yeah, like if you write to me there, I'll write back and we'll figure out a plan and carry it out, you know? Because like Joseph was saying, like you go to Joseph because he can supercharge. It's like putting a supercharger on a car. But if you don't know the engine, if you don't know what the engine is, how can it work? So in this case, if you don't know your own mind, or conversely, if you know your own mind and really get to know it, think of how much more powerfully Joseph's superchargers will work.
Absolutely. John Lewis Parker, thank you. Thank you so much. And as usual, you blew the doors off of it. And I would love to have you come back again because, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So everybody, please do yourself a favor, do your life a favor, do your family a favor. Reach out to him because that is what you have to do. Listen, I always say you must participate in your own rescue. And at the very least, in your own elevation to go further fast. So reach out to him. Enjoy something that I have enjoyed for, like I said, close to 40 years now. And the man is absolutely amazing. And remember this, life is always exactly what you dare to make it. And fortune favors the bold. So the trick to life is to boldly step up and dare to make your life magnificent. I'm Joseph McClendon III. This has been Further Faster with my friend, John Lewis Parker. And I'll see you at the top.
This podcast was a production of Angel Phoenix Productions. Explore more episodes of this show or other great shows on the Angel Phoenix Podcast Network by visiting angelphoenix.com. The views expressed in this show do not necessarily represent those of Angel Phoenix Productions or its advertisers, and may contain language that's unsuitable for younger listeners.